There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday edition of the show. Lots to do today. It's actually the third Tuesday of the month, but we move things around. And today, Ask the Sheriff Day. Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. Got questions for the sheriff, law enforcement questions. Well, we've got the person to answer them coming up at 1 o'clock. So you go ahead and put the put this number in your contact for a text or a phone call. 343-0106, 343-0106, how you reach out to us. And, yeah, you might need it next hour, might need it this hour. Jeff Poor is going to join us, and we'll talk about a couple things. One of them, that the Senate 2020 polling data that came out from the people at Mason-Dixon, pretty interesting, and it shows Roy Moore leading right now among Republican hopefuls. Yeah, that same thing once again. We'll get into that coming up in just a little bit, but a couple of pieces of breaking news as we get started on this Tuesday. Number one, Mobile City Council has voted on a resolution today addressing gun violence that requested approval of two legislative bills related to gun thefts and are also asking the state legislature to give them more independence in dealing with gun-related violence. This coming from John Sharp, who's down there with AL.com at the Mobile City Council meeting. I was watching a little bit of it, and I would love to play the audio for you. I've listened to them taking the vote and all that, but once again, the audio is so bad on the Mobile City Council feed through YouTube, I'm not going to put you through it. It's not very resonant, and it's choppy. I don't know if it's buffering as they're taking this live stream video there or whatever, but it's repetitive, and it jumps forward, and it's a small thing to ask, isn't it? That the City Council feed audio that's usable out there for we the people to be able to hear what they had to say. It's bad. I don't know. I don't think it's a conspiracy that they're trying not to be on the record, because most of them will hop on the show here with us and talk about it. But the feed coming from the Mobile City Council is just weak. So I would say we'll have to wait for a little bit here to kind of get you the words of the members of the City Council. I also don't have the breakdown on who voted how. This just happened about 4 minutes ago with this vote. But remember, what was in question here was the ability of the city to have some kind of punitive measure against citizens who had their handguns, or their guns, I guess, at all, stolen from vehicles that were unlocked. And we talked so many times about how unworkable this might be, but it looks like, and we did point out at that point, whatever the city did, they would have to ask Montgomery for the go-ahead on that. And the resolution today is, they said they have voted on it, and it's addressing gun violence, and it would be, I guess, asking Montgomery to give more liberty to the city of Mobile to be able to slap wrist here when it comes to that. That's the Sullivanese version of what I think happened earlier, but we'll get you more details on that. Also, now a announcement on this Tuesday, even though we're going to talk about the U.S. Senate race in a second, it all ties in with what I'm about to talk about, as former state senator Bill Hightower now announcing his run for AL1. So AL1 will be open. Of course, Bradley Byrne, currently the congressman from AL1, running for Senate. And in that vacuum, so the first name to get in was Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl. He's in, running, and now, as of today, another Mobile County name, Bill Hightower, like I said, former state senator Bill Hightower, announcing his run for Congress as of about an hour and a half ago. So he's in the mix as well. Bill Hightower, I saw the Facebook page is up. I'm in, says Bill Hightower. Says, I'm running for Congress. So this is obviously at the preliminary stages. We have what Jerry Carl announced probably a month ago, maybe more than that. Maybe 5 weeks ago, and now Bill Hightower's name in the mix as well for the seat currently occupied by Bradley Byrne. So AL1 in play because Bradley Byrne making this run at U.S. Senate. All right, so we'll come back and we'll talk about where Bradley Byrne is featured in this Mason-Dixon poll and discussing, number one, job approval for the current person occupying the Senate seat in question, Doug Jones. And then beyond that, who's lining up on the Republican side and what kind of name recognition do they have? And remember, with name recognition, there's positive and negative, right? There's a positive name recognition. They know your name and they like you. And then there's they know your name and they don't like you. I think the worst thing in politics may be that they don't know your name. That's always the danger. And we'll get into that coming up in just a little bit right here with Jeff Poore. Also on the way today, take a look at the latest here out of Paris. Actually, we'll go to some of that audio from Westwood One now as they are assessing the damage at Notre Dame Cathedral. Of course, the different theories are out now. What could have happened? This is from Westwood One's Hottest Gold, who is talking about those theories and saying that it is an accidental fire, according to officials.
The fire that engulfed much of the famed Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris appears to have been accidental, according to officials. It took fire crews approximately 9 hours to extinguish the flames that threatened to destroy one of the most recognizable buildings in the world.
It's very sad because Notre Dame de Paris is the symbol of Paris and the symbol of France.
The interior minister says it will take approximately 2 days to secure the structure before anyone can be allowed back in to pull more artwork and fully assess the damage.
All right, so that's at least the latest. Although I would say that it seems pretty preliminary, right? I mean, it was just on fire yesterday. They already are saying for sure that it was accidental. Of course, there's a lot of questions out there. I mean, there has been a history in France of arson and vandalism on churches there. So I think it warrants an investigation. I don't know that that's what happened. Is it the person, the mistake, like they said yesterday, somebody on one of the construction crews as repairs were being done there in Notre Dame, that could have caused this? Sure. It seems interesting, though, that they're already, I mean, smoke is barely clear, and they're talking about accidental. But we'll keep our eyes on that story internationally. Of course, nationally, talk about the president and the Mueller report, which I believe should be released in a Mad Lib form with the redactions. We'll get some reaction on that as well from Jeff Poore. He joins us live from Huntsville next, right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
By 1218 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Glad to have you here. Also good to have my friend to talk to, Jeff Poore with Lanyap and Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, and of course the host of the Who Else Would They Get? Jeff Poore Show on WVNN in Huntsville. Hey, man.
Hey, Sean, it's so good to be with you today.
It's good to have you here, and lots to talk about. You know, I got you on, I want to talk about this Mason-Dixon poll, and you had tweeted about it this morning, and I want to get into that. But part of that, of course, is the question about who's running for Senate 2020 on the Republican side, and that plays into something happening right back here in southwest Alabama in AL1 with the announcement, the first in, AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne, that he was running for U.S. Senate. Then you had people come out and start getting in to run for the AL1 gig. And we had first announcement Jerry Carl. Then we had Chris Pringle. And just about 2 hours ago, former state senator Bill Hightower into the mix. So what's your take on this?
Yeah, well, I always look for the guy that got in real early that's already raising a bunch of money. Jerry Carl, I think, has an advantage over the other announced candidates. Now, one thing Bill Hightower has going for him, So he's ran a statewide campaign. So maybe that's, say they call it the Get Acquainted campaign. I don't know that he spent a whole lot of time down in Southwest Alabama in the 801, because being a guy that's from that part of the state, when you run statewide, you spend time in other parts of the state. So, you know, what that matters, what that means, that's not clear. Chris Pringle, it seems like he's tried this once before when Sonny Callahan stepped aside. What was that, 2002?
Mm-hmm.
And that cycle, yeah, and it was pretty much a tough slog for him then. We'll see if he can build upon that any. But going from the state house to Congress, you tell me. I think there's probably another intermediary step there, but he's got a lot of work to do to catch up with the other two, I think.
Well, okay, but I mean, you're saying from the state house to Congress, in the case of the at least the funding front runner right now that you mentioned, Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl. I mean, from county commission to Congress, that's a pretty big leap too. I mean, a real big leap.
Well, perhaps, but the county commission districts in Mobile are different than a state house seat. You only have three county commissioners in Mobile. And that's a lot of territory there. That's a lot of geography. So what I think is he's a guy. I would argue that the Mobile County Commission seat that he's in is a much harder seat to win than Chris Pringle's House seat, just based on the number of votes and the amount of money you have to budget to run a race in that district.
Interesting, because I mean, you would think about it if you looked at, a simplistic hierarchy, right? From going from somebody who is local to a county to somebody who represents a portion up in Montgomery, you would think, okay, well, it would go a municipal level, county level, state rep level, and then on up. But you're saying because of the number of people and the way you have to campaign, you believe that person from a county commission level has a higher degree of familiarity within the entirety or some block therein of AL1 than somebody who went to Montgomery. No, it's right. Not a bad idea. I mean,
at least in Mobile County. Now, a lot of other counties where you have 10 county commissioners or 5 or 8 or whatever, it's a lot different. But Mobile County, one of the most populated counties in the state, you only have 3 county commissioners, so there's a lot more votes you got to get to win a county commission seat than to win a House seat. Now, you know, we're in the hierarchy. In theory, a state House member should be higher up the totem pole, but I think based on just that you only have 3 county commissioners and such a big budget, the county budget, and the difficulty of winning that big of a district, this to me gives Jerry Carr a little bit of an edge. And that's just where I'm coming from on it.
No, okay, but we will need to point out, though, AL1, while Mobile County, a big portion of it, you still got Baldwin County, Escambia County, Monroe County, Washington County, part of Clark County. I mean, you've got, you know, a lot more than just Mobile County, and South Mobile County at that.
Yeah, so you got to spend some time. But here's the thing about all those other counties. You don't really see, you'll see a candidate spend, maybe do a stop in Escambia County, Monroe County, but all your votes are in Mobile and in Baldwin County. And I say that it's always been tough for someone from Baldwin County to win that seat, just because people are more familiar. There are more people on your side of the bay than on the Baldwin County side of the bay. Now, Bradley Byrd's obviously an exception, but I would argue that he has been running in state politics. He was a state senator.
Mm-hmm.
He was the chancellor of the two-year college system. He ran for governor. People knew who he was when they went to go vote for him. And you just had that weird election that came up when Joe Bonner stepped aside. It was really a situation that worked out for him, because he had already done all of this. So I think you're obviously not going to have that this time around. But right now, if you're just looking at the map and you're looking at who's got the most geography, is it a state senate district, or is it a county commission district, or is it a state house district? That third congressional, or that third county commission district, is a pretty good chunk of population.
He's just joining us, talking to Jeff Poor, and we're right now talking about AL1, because this fits in with what we're going to talk about in this Senate race as well, because this is all happening because Bradley Byrd announces that he is running for that Senate seat. And in that position, he can't do both, right? He's out. I mean, that opened up the vacancy there at AL1.
Right. He couldn't. He could decide that he doesn't want to run for Senate and then get back in the race. We're a good ways away from qualifying for Republican candidates, and you have a little time there. So, you know, who knows what could happen if Jeff Sessions gets in this race. Bradley Byrne is running for Congress again. He comes back home to AL1. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's running. But who knows? I mean, we were a long way out, but it would take something like that, in my opinion, for Bradley Byrne not to to come back home and run for that seat.
All right. Well, you teed the ball up perfectly for me, because we talked in the past about whether Jeff Sessions would return and make that run at Senate, and I was at that API dinner a couple weeks ago, and it didn't. You're talking to people there, and you talk to people every day. It didn't seem to me that was the ambition for Jeff Sessions at that point. But you cautioned us a couple different times and said that may be true unless there's a chance of a Roy Moore repeat, and then maybe the higher ups will say, "Hey, you need to run for this. We're going to back you to keep Jeff Sessions keep Roy Moore from winning." Well. It's a preliminary, very early poll here, but Mason-Dixon, Alabama poll out about the Senate race 2020 has Roy Moore at the top of the stack for Republicans.
Yeah, and Roy Moore has all the name ID. You know, I've been guilty of this. I have underestimated Roy Moore for the last probably 10 years, thinking that he's a has-been. I tell you, Sean, he's kind of the MySpace of Republican candidates. He was like really cool at one time. You know, he was like the guy to rally behind because he had that Ten Commandments monument, and he wasn't going to be fold to the politically correct crowd. And then just something got weird about it, right? And mm-hmm. He kind of like, yeah, I don't know about all of this. And that's to me, he still has name ID. As long as he's got the name ID, it's going to be tough in this state to beat him unless you find somebody else that knows who he is, because he's been because they ran statewide office or something. It's just tough right now, and I see that, and I don't know what's. I know Bradley Byrne's campaign is doing everything he can do, and I think they're doing it the right way, but it's tough for him to get traction in other parts of the state for some reason. So that's a big part of it. But the one thing I'd caution you about this poll, there is no Tommy Tuberville.
Yeah, and I said that this morning. I was seeing it on the when I talked about it on the air. I said, this was done like after Tuberville announced. I think it was done from the 9th through the 11th of April, and I think that's post Tubbs announcement, right?
Yeah. So they did not include Tommy Tuberville.
I wonder why.
And it tells me there's something else going on here. And I've talked to Mo a few times about it.
You mean Mo
he
Brooks?
There's about a Mo Brooks. Yeah. There's about a 1% chance that he says he will run, and so I think you scratch him off. He says the only way that he runs, and he said this publicly, is if Donald Trump says, I'm backing you, Congressman Brooks, for the Senate seat. Then he says he gets in. Otherwise, he's going to stay up here in North Alabama as a congressman.
Okay, so let's walk this through for a second here. With the we always talk about these lanes, and by the way, there's lots to get into when we'll talk about the Roy Moore thing, because people say, well, you know, he has his backing, but he also has a ceiling. But we'll get into that. Like you said earlier today, that's what they said last time. But I want to get into this lanes, you know, and describing it. This is very intra-party here for the Republicans, different lanes. Tuberville takes away from whom? Byrne takes away from whom? Who takes away from Roy Moore?
Tuberville created his own lane. And we're in a different era in Republican politics in Alabama, I think. Tuberville takes the Trump lane. I don't know. Like Sean Spicer and the current Trump administration aren't on the best of terms. But Sean Spicer knows how to play the MAGA card. And obviously that does well here. I mean, you see Tommy Tuberville strolling around in a Make America Great Again hat. We don't know what Tommy Tuberville is. He's a blank slate at this point. So what I think about him, though, is he could make a lane for himself. Now, Bradley Byrne, everybody seems to think that he is going to be your establishment country club Republican. He's going to try to run as the conservative, as the Trump guy. But, you know, he's having a tough time of pulling that off. And I don't know what it is, if it's the messaging, if it's just the believability of it, but that's sort of the hurdle he's got to overcome. He would like to be in the conservative or the Trump lane, but right now he is the establishment guy. You really don't have anybody in that, like the Ted Cruz lane, the Mo Brooks lane, if Mo doesn't run, the Tea Party lane, if you will. You don't, you know, Gary Palmer, if he were to get in, and I talked to him a couple of times, and he, every time you ask, they're still praying about it. So mm-hmm. the door's still open for a Gary Palmer run. Make of that what you will, but you know, I don't know what kind of campaigner he's going to be. Have you ever had Gary Palmer on your show?
I have not. No.
So he's for whatever reason, people really love him. I don't know if he has like really a persona, a go-getter persona that would really work in the rest of the state, that he's like somebody that's going to get crowds to rally and be real boisterous. He's just not that kind of guy. Now, he's got the conservative credentials. I mean, he ran API.
Mm-hmm.
He could raise a lot of money. As we like to say, that Gary Palmer could butt dial somebody and raise $10,000. He's that kind of politician. So then you get on further down the list here, and what, Del Marsh doesn't look like he's going to run. We know Will Ainsworth isn't, but Marsh is just damaged goods at this point. I think it's just too much for him to overcome.
And when we come back for the break, I want to talk about that, because I thought it was kind of a tell that, you know, Ainsworth not running, that maybe that meant Del Marsh was getting in, but you think not. We'll come right back and talk about this more with Jeff Poore when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:36, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. If you didn't catch it earlier in the show, a couple things. Washington City Council voted to ask Montgomery for some more liberty on cracking down on people having guns in unlocked cars. We'll talk about that in more detail coming up. Plus, Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us at hour number two of the show. Plus, the announcement of Bill Hightower now in for AL1, and that makes three: Mobile County Commissioner Jerry Carl, State Rep Chris Pringle, and now former State Senator Bill Hightower in for AL1. And that kind of ties into the reason for all this is AL1's Congressman Bradley Byrne running for Senate, and that's one of the things we're talking about with Jeff Poore. And Jeff, we've got a... It's interesting because I thought that it was going to be, at least the rumor mill had it would be either Senate President Pro Tem Del Marsh or Lieutenant Governor Will Ainsworth running. They both wouldn't run, but one of them would run. Now it sounds like you're saying neither of them would run.
Well, we know Ainsworth's not running. He made that official last week. So
I thought that was a tell. Yeah, I thought that was like a tell that Del Marsh was going to announce, but you're saying no.
No, I don't think so. He is not polling very well at all. He's polling like single digits.
Yep.
No one knows who he is outside of Montgomery or outside of Manistee, Alabama. So there's not a whole lot of votes that way. And I just think he's got the baggage right now of this gas tax thing that they're just going to bludgeon him with. And then also there's some other things, this ethics law that they want to pass that he's got his name on, that he's co-sponsoring. There's a lot of liabilities of the Del Marsh candidacy. And, you know, I couldn't for the life of me figure out why he was going along with this gas tax hike. Then I thought, well, maybe perhaps this is it, that he is going to get the backing of the business community in Alabama, that he's going to have the BCA, that he's going to have, they like to call them the big mules, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was his play, that he went along with this, and he was going to be Luther Strange 2.0. It didn't work out for Luther Strange, but he seems to be more of a better retail politician than Big Luther was. Maybe that was his play, but just coming out of it, there just doesn't seem to be any kind of any enthusiasm for him. And I would say right now, I'm pretty well connected. You don't hear much about him putting any kind of personnel together, like a staff, and gearing up for it. Usually when these candidates look like they're going to run, and especially as soon as Will Ainsworth announces he's not running, you would have thought, well, then he's going to start making some phone calls. It hasn't happened yet. Now, we're way early, but what I'm hearing and what I'm talking to people, that he's going to sit this one out.
All right, let's get into The names that were in this poll, and you and I both have pointed out, Tommy Tuberville not in there, so I think that, first of all, leaves me scratching my head why they didn't, and number two, it may skew some of the numbers as they're reported here, but this sample, and they had sample, of course, Republicans and Democrats and independents in this Mason-Dixon poll. Let's look at some of the things, like you just mentioned it, talking about Del Marsh, and that is name recognition. You know, there's say whatever you want, just spell my name right, you know, that old tome. But you see it here because in their portion of this poll, they ask the question, do you recognize the name blank? And if yes, do you have a favorable, unfavorable, or neutral opinion of blank? And Roy Moore tops the recognize favorable, and he also tops the recognize unfavorable on this poll.
Yeah, and, you know, there's still a lot of people that are Republican voters that think that he got a raw deal, that he did, somebody just leveled some charges out there, and then all of a sudden here we are 2 years out of that, and well, whatever happened to the charges, whatever happened to all of that. Now, it's my understanding that I've talked to Roy Moore twice in the last few months about running for Senate, and it's my understanding they're waiting for this Lee Corfman lawsuit that she has against Roy Moore for defamation to get dismissed. Then you'll see him jump in. I don't know what what's going on with that. It's hard for me to tell if they're making any progress on that. But I'm not so sure that this lawsuit is going to be dismissed or not. Now, we got a lot of time. He could get in late. Probably still do well. He won't raise any money, but he doesn't need to.
He didn't last time. He didn't. He was out. What? What was he outspent? Remember, we had the numbers. It was some crazy multiple. He was outspent by Luther Strange.
No, like 27-1 or something.
Yeah.
Like he just. You didn't see a lot of Roy Moore ads, and he was misstepping all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
If he had a campaign with a little discipline, and he brought in somebody that knew what they were doing. I love Bill Armitage, but Bill Armstead, but I don't think he was the guy to be running that campaign. If you get in somebody with some discipline, and you could reinvent this guy, then maybe he's got a shot. I think he definitely has a shot at a runoff, just based on where he is right now. And you know, these Republican primaries, Sean, are very low turnout.
Yep.
Donald Trump will be at the top of the ballot. There's not a whole lot of reason otherwise to go because we don't have a competitive presidential Republican primary. I don't think you're going to see the turnout like you have in the past when Obama was president and we're still kind of fighting over who's going to be the nominee. Donald Trump's going to be the nominee, so a lot of people may not come out to vote, and that'll figure into the calculus. You can't rely on the Trump voter necessarily, but you just got to think about what is that ballot going to look like, and who's going to come out to vote in a Republican primary in 2020?
Yeah, and this goes back to number one, you know, just like last time, Roy Moore support is in concrete, mostly. I mean, we'll argue how wet the concrete is, but it's not going away, but it doesn't grow very easily. At the same time, though, those people, like you said, they are overrepresented in a low turnout scenario. But I want to go back to this name recognition thing, because I think this is a huge tell in this Mason-Dixon poll. You know, Roy Moore recognized favorable 34%, recognize unfavorable 29%, recognize neutral gets me 33%. That's wild for Roy Moore. But don't recognize only 4%. Now you go through, look at all the other people, the names listed here, and their don't recognize numbers are as high as 70%. And Roy Moore is sitting at 4%. If that's not brand, whichever way it goes, positive or negative, but if that's not branded Alabama, I don't know what is.
Yeah, if you don't know who Roy Moore is, come out from under the rock and see the sunlight. We've been talking about this guy for 20 years, right?
Yep.
And going all the way back to when he was a circuit judge in Etowah County, and he had those wood carvings of Ten Commandments on his on the bench, you remember? So he is known in Alabama. I think that's good enough right now to get him in a runoff. I don't know what they'll try to do there. If he gets, I'm telling you folks, I have underestimated this man before in the past. I thought there was no way he was going to beat Mo Brooks. I thought there was no way he was going to beat Luther Strange, and he beats them both, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he is a guy that if he gets the right person in there, that will install a little discipline in a campaign, watch out. I mean, and then maybe you see, then maybe you see something happen where a Jeff Sessions or somebody steps in. I just can't believe that we're going to, the Republican Party is going to let Roy Moore be the nominee again easily. I mean, but I'm looking at this poll today, and I'm a Republican, and I'm into, you know, I'm one of these big donors and players. I got to be thinking, man, this is trouble.
Yeah, and this is a situation that leads that call. Do you think that call, does it really happen that way? Would somebody get on the phone to Jeff Sessions and say, hey, you know, maybe in a couple months, we have some real internal polling. This stuff shows us this trend is happening again. We're about to repeat the special election. Roy Moore will be the candidate, and our polling shows that he will lose again to Doug Jones. You've got to come back. Does the phone ring and he gets a call like that at the Sessions household?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. Maybe it's Donald Trump calling him and saying, man, we don't need to lose another election in Alabama. That should be a layup. Now, the difference will be Trump will be on the ballot in 2020, right? So you're definitely going to have a bigger turnout than you had in 2017, a special election in the middle of December in 2017. And Doug Jones just barely eked it out. You're going to have a lot more Republicans coming to come vote for Donald Trump, I think. It's going to make it a little tougher for Doug Jones to win in that situation. But who wants to chance it, right?
I mean, really? I mean, it will. When Doug Jones was elected, you know, the cooler mind said, well, that's the anomaly of the, you know, this situation that put Roy Moore there because Luther Strange was a bad candidate. We know that won't happen again. So, the, you know, the Doug Jones days are numbered here before he is out. But you look at this stuff, and here's Roy Moore once again at the top of the stack when it comes to, you know, names here for Republican hopefuls for Senate 2020. I mean, way ahead.
Well, yeah, it was a decent lead. Now, maybe if you start crossing some names off the list and you take off a Mo Brooks, maybe take off a Gary Palmer, and you start, that number gets a little closer. Or you throw in a Tommy Tuberville, which I think is going to change everything. I think if you had Tommy Tuberville in this, he may not have quite the name ID because it's been a while since he's been Auburn's head football coach. But
oh, come on, he has his name recognition. He'd be right there with Roy Moore or above, probably even above maybe for name recognition. Let's just be frank about that.
I don't know because it's been a while since he's coached. Now, how, you know, what is the age of the electorate, and we don't really know like how young or how old it is. They may recognize his name. I don't know, but it may look weird to them being on a political survey versus like a sports page in the Birmingham News or whatever, right? So you wouldn't necessarily associate him with politics. But I think Tuberville on that changes things. I don't know how much. This is kind of uncharted territory. And I had Steve Flowers on the program, and that was always like, for George Wallace, the only person he was ever afraid of running was Bear Bryant.
Right.
You know, what other football coach, beyond Nick Saban, like, what other football coaches do you think are going to be universally loved in the state? Maybe Gene Stallings or somebody?
Right.
But I don't know. I put Tommy Tuberville in that class of Bear Bryant, Nick Saban, and Gene Stallings.
No, probably not. I want to get one last, a couple more takes from you real quick here. Number one, did you see at the beginning of that poll they were asking people what they felt was a job performance for Senator Jones, right, for Doug Jones? Were you surprised by the 45% say they approve? I mean, in Alabama, 45% of respondents said they approved of Jones's performance in office.
And only 44% disapproved.
Yeah, so I thought that was very telling to me. That surprised me.
He's in a good spot for given all the uphill climbs he's got to have now. People leave this poll, but once they start running ads reminding everybody that he was against Brett Kavanaugh, then I think that number that you eat into that number a little bit. But take that away, take the weird abortion stuff away, the comments he made right out of the gate for whatever reason he felt that was necessary. I do think he's got a puncher shot at it.
Whoa. Really?
You throw in Roy Moore and you base it on this number, then he's got a shot.
You heard the call right here. All right, before we wrap up, what are you hearing out of Montgomery? What's the latest on the dueling? Are they really dueling lotto bills? I mean, does one have, are they neck and neck, or does one have advantage over the other? What are you thinking right now between the Albritton bill and the McClendon bill?
I think the McClendon bill is dead. We had Albritton on the show yesterday. The one thing I can't ever get these guys to tell me, if they push this lottery through, what does it mean for the Porch Creek Indians? And what does that mean? Do they get Class 3 gaming? And all of a sudden, because we've talked about this, and federal law dictates that they can have the same kind of gaming that you have in the state. So I wonder if it's a situation with the Albritton bill. McClendon bill was going to give more to the dog track owners and what they call it, the video lottery terminals.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just unacceptable. It was unacceptable to the Porch Creeks, and they have a lot of sway in Montgomery. But if you do a lottery without that compromise, then the Porch Creeks get to go into Class 3 gaming, and you might as well not even have slot machines in Victoryland or Green Track. So, I mean, people like to say, we don't have a lottery in Alabama because we're a bunch of a Bible-thumping, church-going, you know, hayseeds or whatever, but it's never been that. It's always been about making all the different gaming interests in Alabama happy.
Have I had a failed understanding, that bad of a failed understanding all these years? Because you mentioned it for a second. I was under the belief, and for the reason that I've been told by multiple people, exactly what you laid out, that the nature of whatever was legal in the rest of the state could be a video version of that on, you know, tribal lands. Therefore, because churches have bingo and all that stuff, bingo's legal, that's why you have video bingo. You're saying that if a lottery passes, for example, the Albritton idea, and the lottery passes, that green lights Class 3 gaming? Because to me, that seems like it would green light video lottery, not...
So here's the deal. You would have to first pass a constitutional amendment, the 1901 Constitution,
right, to change.
Gambling is legal in Alabama. Then it's a
lottery, though.
Legislature.
Wouldn't you have to be lottery would be legal? It wouldn't say gambling. It would say it would be specific to lottery, right?
Well, that's the rub there. But if you could have a, I think it comes down to a definition of a game of skill versus a game of chance. And once you legalize a game of chance, if federal law, if the Porch Creek Indians wanted to do this, it's not clear that they want to do it or not, but they would at least have a legal argument to come in and have Class 3 gaming.
And then you would see the, if they know that's coming, then the people in the state would react to be able to, I mean, if it's going to exist, might as well have it exist everywhere, I think. We'll have to. So, wow,
yeah,
okay.
And that's why I think McClendon was trying to throw a bone to the dog track owners, and that was a step too far for the Porch Creeks, and I think that they have all the sway right now in Montgomery.
There he is. Jeff Poore, WVNN. Catch him this afternoon starting at 2 o'clock. Of course, make sure when the official, we go into the straight-up voting for the Nappies, you vote for him, your favorite Lanyap writer, also working with Breitbart and Yellowhammer News. And hopefully we'll get together in Montgomery real soon and be able to do some live shows from there again.
Yeah, sounds like a plan. Let's do it up.
All right, very good. Jeff Poore, coming right back. We'll grab your phone calls at 343-0106. It's Midday Mobile. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
A big thank you to Jeff. Looks like to just kind of bring you in on our plans here. Looks like the 29th, well, the 30th actually starts to return to Montgomery. So we'll be taking this show, I hope, on the 30th of the month to Montgomery and be there as they are working on a handful of things in Montgomery. And we'll be doing live shows from there like we did back during special session. So that's probably coming up on the 30th. Also, give you a heads up here. It is something you've heard me talk about for years. Shaving with Harry's. Been doing it for four plus years now. And I tell you, I love the shave. Yeah, that's the keystone to the whole thing, the fact that the blades are great. Now, beyond that, the fact that the price is half what you're probably paying at the grocery store or pharmacy, that's a big reason to get on board. And the convenience of having those blades show up at your house, not having to remember to go out there, put it on your shopping list, run out on a Sunday night at like 9:45 to get, not that I've done that, 9:45 at night to go get blades because you had a big meeting on a Monday or something like that. Guys, check out the convenience, check out the great shave, and do it right now at the best deal I've seen in all the years I've been talking about Harry's. They got a special offer, limited time, Harry's special offer for listeners of this show. New customers, y'all will get $5 off your trial set from Harry's when you use my code MOBILE at harrys.com. Get a razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and travel cover, all just $3 plus free shipping when you use code MOBILE at harrys.com. Go to harrys.com today and join the 10 million of us who are shaving with Harry's. Use code MOBILE at checkout and claim your offer and let them know I sent you. Help support Midday Mobile. Coming right back, Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us next.